Today is Wednesday, May 24th, Chaf Chet Iyar, 50th anniversary of Yom Yerushalayim. This is the women's Chumashir, but we'll do something special for Yom Yerushalayim based on Bamidbar, chapter, end of Perek Yud.
Okay, Rabotai. On account of the fact that today is Yom Yerushalayim, a very special Yom Yerushalayim, I want to do something, Lichvod Yom Yerushalayim, that is based on Chumash. It'll be primarily an analysis of something in Chumash, in Sefer Bamidbar, a fantastic presentation of the Rav, where he cites a Rashi and offers, you know, somewhat of a totally different approach to the issue that Rashi raises. So, but just in order to frame the issue, if you take the sheet that I distributed, it's on the bottom of the where it says page number one, which is the Rambam Halacha Tet Zayin of Hilchot Beit HaBchira, the laws of the Beit HaMikdash. I'm going to tell you what the issue is, and then we're going to see how it emerges from the Chumash text. We entered Eretz Yisrael on two occasions. Now three. But historically, on two occasions. Yehoshua's conquest. Then came Churban Beit HaMikdash al Yidei Bavel. We were in exile for 70 years. And we returned to Israel in 516. 70 years in Bavel. Ezra returned from Bavel and built the second Beit HaMikdash, which was destroyed in the year 70. So there were two comings into Israel, one by Yoshua, one by Ezra, and two building of the Beit HaMikdash. The building of the first Beit HaMikdash took place with Shlomo, many years after Yehoshua entered the land. Ezra, when he entered Israel and returned with 43,000 people, that's all the number of people who came from Bavel to Israel, the rest decided to stay in Bavel. The first thing that he did was build a Beit HaMikdash. Okay? So we have two comings and two buildings of the Beit HaMikdash. The first coming into Israel, which was initiated by Yehoshua, sanctified the land so that after the conquest, anybody who had a field would be obligated to observe all what we call mitzvot hatluyot ba'aretz. All the mitzvot that depend on the land. Giving truma, giving ma'aser, leaving the corner of the field, pe'ah, shmitah. All of that was triggered by the sanctity as a result of the conquest of Yehoshua. That claims Rambam was terminated when the Babylonians destroyed the Beit HaMikdash and drove us out of Israel into Babylonia. So if you somehow hid in some little winkle, some little corner, and you didn't have to go to Babylonia, and you lived in Tel Aviv or in Bnei Brak, for those 70 years that the Jews were in Israel, and you planted your field, you would not be obligated to observe Shemitah. You would not have to give Trumot and Maasrot. You wouldn't have to observe any mitzvot hatluyot ba'aretz. Why? Because the land was lacking the sanctity of Kiddushat Haaretz during those 70 years. Because it was terminated when Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Bavel, drove us out of Israel. That's how Rambam rules. However, Rambam says, and he's going to explain it, and we're going to look at only Chumash then, the sanctity of the Mikdash and all of Yerushalayim, despite the fact that the Beit HaMikdash was in ruins, despite the fact that there was hardly anybody left in Yerushalayim, nonetheless, the sanctity that that was created by the building of the first Beit HaMikdash by Shlomo is retained le'olam va'ed. So even though there is no second Beit HaMikdash any longer, that was destroyed by the Romans, the Har HaBayit and all of Yerushalayim retains its original sanctity from the day that Shlomo dedicated the Beit HaMikdash. Rambam. Now, not everyone agrees with him. But Rambam believed the Kedusha of all of Eretz Yisrael for Trumot and Masrot was terminated. But the Kedusha of the Mikdash, and then the Rambam's extension of Mikdash to include all of Yerushalayim, he believes that it retained its Kedusha, whether the building stands, the building is rebuilt, building is destroyed again, until this very day. And not everybody agrees with this. The Ravid, for example, I'm not going to focus on the Ravid, but he believes there is no sanctity to the Temple Mount today. So there'd be no reason to go on to the Har HaBayit. No reason. Has no sanctity. Why go visit it?
But also no reason not to.
Correct. But it's a historical event. There'd be no reason not to, because the Kedusha of the Har HaBayit was destroyed when the Romans destroyed the Second Temple. However, we follow the Rambam in this regard, and even if we do go on the Har HaBayit, we walk around the perimeters where we know an ordinary person who has not been sprinkled with the ashes of the Parah Adumah can walk, but on the interior, particularly over the Dome of the Rock, we're very careful not to enter, not to come too close, because we know historically where the Makom of the Mikdash was and where the Azara was, in an area which precludes anybody who is Tamei Meit come in contact with the deceased. And we all assume that we're Tamei Meit until we have the ashes of the Parah Adumah. So Rambam, in this one halakha that we're going to read, is going to explain, why do I distinguish between all of Israel, where I agree with all my colleagues that the sanctity of Israel was terminated after the Babylonian exile, but why do I believe that the Mikdash retained its Kedusha ad Hayom Hazeh, even though the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed? That's what he's going to explain. Yes.
All the farmers in Israel today and in the religious kibbutzim, they don't follow the rules of the land?
Yes. They do, according to most. I don't want to go into that. The Rambam believes that the second sanctification of Israel, which came about as a result of Ezra, was not destroyed, even though the Romans destroyed and kicked us out of Israel. The Rambam says that elsewhere, that the sanctification, and therefore most religious kibbutzim do observe, but there might be another reason, again I don't want to get into it, why it might only be rabbinic. It probably is only rabbinic. That'll change by the next Shemitah, or the one thereafter, depends how fast it happens, when the majority of Jews of the world be living in Israel. Then it will convert to a biblical level, and we're going to have a problem with that Shemitah, because you can't rely on the Het HaMechira if it's on a D'oraita level. It's going to be one of the major challenges of the religious kibbutzim, what to do during that Shemitah year, when no one will approve what we call the sale, the Mechira, to a Gentile, to an Arab, to somehow enable us to work the land during the Shemitah year. That'll be one. It'll be either the next Shemitah, depends which, when it happens, either one, the next coming one, which is in about 4 or 5 years, or maybe by one thereafter, for sure it'll happen. But anyhow, so I want to focus on why the Mikdash was never, the sanctity was never terminated according to Rambam. So look at Halakha Tezayin. Velama ani omer b'mikdash v'Yerushalayim shekdusha rishona kidushatan le'atid lavo. Why do I, Rambam, say that the sanctity of the Mikdash and Jerusalem which was sanctified the first time, Kiddusha Rishona, by Shlomo HaMelech. Kiddushatan, its sanctity, was not only for its time, but le'atid lavo. Mazel le'atid lavo? For all future generations. Ubikiddushat sha'ar Eretz Yisrael. And in relationship to the sanctity of the rest of Israel, Haifa, Bnei Brak, Tel Aviv, Eilat, the rest of Israel, le'inyan shvi'it, in relationship to Shemitah, u'ma'asrot, u'kayotze bohen, lo kitcha le'atid lavo, why was the first sanctification of Yehoshua terminated and was not a permanent one? Says the Rambam, lefi shekidushat hamikdash v'Yerushalayim mipnei hashchina. What ultimately sanctifies the Mikdash? Not the building, it's the presence of God. And here comes the Rambam's famous three words. Ushchina eina b'teila. You can't annul the presence of the Shechina. God decided He's resting there, whether there is a building or not. He rests His Shechina there. And the mere presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu Shechina, which is impossible for Nebuchadnezzar or anybody to terminate, that gives cause and rise to the sanctity of Yerushalayim and the Mikdash. Therefore, says the Rambam, its Kiddusha remains today, and we are celebrating and thanking the Rabbonu Shalom. Hopefully you said hallel today with a bracha, and thank the Kadosh Baruch Hu for the opportunities that we have in our generation to walk the streets of Yerushalayim and to come to the Kotel and to ascend the Har HaBayit anytime we want. This is what the Rambam says. What I would like to do is show you the Rav's theory, how this ultimately came about, by looking at two psukim in Chumash. This is a Chumash class. We're not doing any other Rambams, nothing but Chumash. Open up to Perek Yud of Sefer Bamidbar, the last two psukim of the chapter. Verses 35 and 36, chapter 10 of Sefer Bamidbar. You will never hear this any place else. You'll look to any. Everybody knows the Rambam, but not many people heard this from the Rav. It's printed in bits and pieces here and there, but not a wholesome approach. So if you were with us about 28 years ago, we did this when we did Sefer Bamidbar. We eventually did this when we did Sefer Bamidbar, which was a long time ago. So, these two psukim, as you see in your Chumash, are bracketed by inverted nuns. Inverted nuns. The two psukim have entered our Sidur. 35 is when you take the Torah out. Vayhi b'nisoah ha'aron vayomer Moshe. And then 36, uvenu cho yomar, when you put the Torah back. You say, every time you take the Torah back, you put say uvenu cho yomar, and on Shabbos and Yantav, you sing Eitz Chaim Hi. So, those are the two psukim. They are bracketed by inverted nuns. So take a look at Rashi. Rashi is troubled why there are brackets. Those two nuns are written in the Torah. Two inverted nuns. So Rashi says in verse 35, Pasuk Lamedei, Vayhi b'nisoah ha'aron, Asa lo simaniyot milefanav ulemeachrav. It put a sign, something to indicate in front and in back, lomar she'ein zem mikomo. These two psukim don't belong here. Where do they belong? Rashi doesn't tell us that. Rashi doesn't tell us where he thinks these psukim belong. But if they don't belong here, what question do you have to ask? Why are they written here? So Rashi writes, "Velama nichtav kan." Why have they been placed here? Kidei lahafsik bein puranut lepuranut, to interrupt two tragedies that took place with Bnei Yisrael. Two tragedies. And that's all Rashi says. Now, if you look at chapter 11, the tragedy that follows is documented in the text. It says, look at chapter 11, Vayhi ha'am kimit onenim. The people were complaining. What they were complaining about, it doesn't say. There were various theories. I'm not interested in it now. Ra ba'oznei Hashem. God was somewhat concerned, and it bothered him when he heard the complaints. Vayicharapo, and he got very angry. Vativ arbam eish Hashem. And the fire of God, God set a fire within the camp. Vatochal bikzei hamachaneh. And the people living on the fringe of the camp were burnt. Terrible tragedy. So that is documented in the Chumash. What episode happened before is not recorded at all in the text. There is nothing that seems to describe anything terrible. So Rashi expects us to know a midrash. He expects us to know a midrash. So if you look at Pasuk Lamed Gimel, it says, Vayis'u Mehar Hashem. They traveled from Har Sinai. Good. Says the Medrash, Rashi doesn't study him, Kitinok Haboreach Mi Beit HaSefer. It's like every kid when the bell rings. In other words, God, when he was delivering the mitzvot, paused after mitzvah number 613. He took a little breath. Everybody said, here before he gives number 614. And they charged away from Har Sinai, and God was very upset and he punished the Jews. It's nowhere found in the text. It's in this midrash, and Rashi relies on this midrash to substantiate his opinion why these two psukim were written here. To interrupt between that which it says they traveled from the mountain and the event of Tav Eira, the place where people were burned. Kachalo made Rashi. So the difficulty is he has to rely on a midrash, which doesn't appear anywhere in the text. And number two, where do these psukim actually belong? Rashi doesn't care to tell us. Yes?
But according to the pshat, it seems like it would fit here, because it says, Banan Hashem Aleihem Yomam Bin Aspam Yom Achaneh. You're talking about when
the Rabboni
being...
Okay, you're on to something. Good. Legis Arayin and Keshila for just a moment. Good. Rabbeinu Bachya, he at least, he agrees with Rashi's analysis, but he said, I know where they belong. You go 50 parshiot backwards. It's an inverted nun. That's why it's an inverted nun. Nun is 50. And it's inverted to look backwards. So a parsha is either a pei or a samach. In your chumash, there's a pei or a samach. A psucha or a stuma. I told you what that is. It's an open line or a closed line, whatever it is. But it indicates a new topic. So if you count 50 parshiot backwards, you get up to chapter 2 of Sefer Bamidbar, verse 17. So open up to Perek Bet, Pasuk Yud Zayin, and you'll see exactly what Vivi suggested. Exactly what it suggested. Good. This chapter 2 is describing the flank formation of how Am Yisrael ought to travel. We'll read it this coming Shabbat. So there were 12 tribes, each divided into four flanks. Three tribes, each one. So first, Degel Machane Reuven would travel. Then Degel Machane Yehuda. And after six tribes moved, then the Torah reports in chapter 2, verse 17, V'nasa Ohel Moed. That's when the camp of Levi, who lived around the Mishkan, they would now fold up the Mishkan and begin to travel. That was supposed to happen. And the Torah now would report, When they traveled, Vayehi ben Soa Ha'aron, what would Moshe say? Kuma Hashem v'yafutzo evecha. If there are any enemies who are attacking us, please, God, disperse the enemy and let us prevail. So that's where it belongs, in Perek Bet, Pasuk Yud Zayin. But he fundamentally agrees with Rashi that it doesn't belong here.
Who is that?
Rabbeinu Bachya ibn Pekuda. Very creative, very suggestive, very, very interesting. However, I want to share with you how the Rav analyzed these two psukim. The Rav suggested that the key to understanding why these two psukim belong here is simply knowing where we are in terms of the narrative of Am Yisrael. So I'm going to review the end of Sefer Shmot, because there is nothing happening in terms of narrative in Sefer Vayikra other than one event that took place on the day of the dedication of the Mishkan. Nadav and Avihu died. That's it. The rest of Sefer Vayikra, as we'll see, is just the laws of the Ohel Moed. Here is what's happened in Sefer Shmot. We left Mitzrayim on the 15th day of the month of Nisan. We traveled for 7 weeks in the desert until we reached Har Sinai. And on the 6th day of the month of Sivan, Moshe went up to Har Sinai and got the Luchot. God spends the next 39 days talking to Moshe, giving him, presumably, what's the rest of the Torah. Moshe comes down on the 17th of Tammuz. We're now in Parshat Ki Tisa. And the Egel is discovered. Moshe smashes the Luchot to smithereens. And he spends another 40 days trying to clean up the mess. He and Shevet Levi kill 3,000 people. 3,000 people who were apparently who bowed down to the and there were witnesses that they bowed down to the Egel. Moshe goes up on Rosh Chodesh Elul to Har Sinai, spends another 40 days. God tells him to craft the second Luchot and the giving of Torah Shebaal Peh. And he comes down on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur, he has two messages. God forgives you for the Chet HaEgel. Plus, here are the second Luchot and the Torah. And in fact, in the poetry, in the liturgy, on Yom Kippur, when we after the Avodah, we describe Yom Kippur as Yom Nitinat HaTorah. It's a day of giving of the Torah, which it was. Because on Shavuot, we got the first Luchot, but that was it. Nothing else. And those didn't last very long. Fine. The day after Yom Kippur, the 11th day of the month of Tishrei, God commands Moshe to start building the Mishkan. The Jews need something tangible for worship. He learned that God understood that that was the craving at the Egel. So they start building the Mishkan. Very nice. When is the Mishkan completed? We're now at the end of Sefer Shmot. When is the Mishkan dedicated? First day of the month of Nisan. 15 days before the first anniversary of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. Okay? That's where all of Sefer Vayikra is given to Moshe. All of Sefer Vayikra. And the story resumes in chapter 9 of Sefer Bamidbar. The story resumes chapter 9 of Sefer Bamidbar. Chapter 9, look at Perek Tet of Sefer Bamidbar and tell me the date. Chapter 9 of Sefer Bamidbar. When is that? Nisan, 15 days before Pesach. So what does Moshe remind everybody? Standing there at Har Sinai. Yontiv is 2 weeks away. Please remember to bring the Korban Pesach. Right? Good. Very nice. And he knows, we're not going to travel now with 14 days left to Yom Tov. And so, and those people who were Tamei, Elitzaphan and Oziel, who actually took the bodies out of the Mishkan when Nadav and Avihu were burnt. They became Tamei, so they came crying to Moshe, why should we not have an opportunity to bring a Korban Pesach? So what halacha did Moshe inquire of God in chapter 9? Pesach Sheni. And God said, they're right, give them an opportunity in a month from now on the 14th of Iyar to bring a Korban Pesach. Fine. It's now chapter 10. It's 7 days after Pesach is over. It's the 22nd day of the month of Nisan, 7 days after the first anniversary of Yetziat Mitzrayim. So Moshe knows we're going to start moving soon. So what command does Moshe get to make the trumpets at the beginning of chapter 10? Asei lecha shtei chatzotzrot. Why does he need trumpets? Because they need signals when to start packing up. You can't just start moving. You got to fold up your tent. You got to fold up the Mishkan. You got to get ready. So I need various signals to give a signal when to stop, when to move, when to gather if I want to speak to you. So he makes two silver trumpets. Then he repeats the flag formation. He repeats it. Because who knows when the last time they heard it, he reminds them all about the flag formation. That's also in chapter 10. And now comes Moshe's final call in verse 29 of chapter 10. 29 of chapter 10. Vayobe Moshe lechova ben Ruel Hamidjani. He is Yitro, who here is identified as Chovav, Chotein Moshe, Moshe's father-in-law. Nosim anachnu el hamakom ha-shamar Hashem, oto etein aleichem, alochem. We're about to begin traveling to the land which God promised us. And he invites his father-in-law to please come and join us. And Yitro declines. Moshe begs him a second time. Fine. So what was about to happen?
They're leaving.
They're about to leave Har Sinai and start proceeding to Israel. How long was it scheduled to take? The text says, Derech Shloshet Yamin, 3 days. Said the Rav, this is where these psukim belong. Where they should have belonged. Why should they have belonged here? Because had Moshe implemented that which he just told his father-in-law, he would have been saying, Vayhi bin Soa Ha'aron, Vayomer Moshe. We're traveling to Israel, and when we get to Israel, there are going to be seven nations who are currently occupying the land, who don't want to give up their land. Hence, we ask God to help us scatter the enemy. V'yanusu misanecha mipanecha. The problem is that this was never launched. Never fulfilled. Why? Because what happens immediately thereafter in chapter 11. That's not just the complaining, but what they're complaining about. Look at verse 4. The Ho'asaf Sufa Sher Bikibo, the riffraff within Am Yisrael, Hit Avu Tava. They were gluttonous. They wanted something. Doesn't say what yet. Vayashuvu vayivku gam b'nei Yisrael. B'nei Yisrael chimed in as well. What did they say? Vayomru mi le'achileinu basar. We want a roast beef sandwich. We remember the fish which we ate in Mitzrayim, and the cucumbers, and the watermelon, and the garlic, and the onion. And Moshe says to himself and then to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, what's wrong with these people? We're on the cusp of entering into Eretz Yisrael, and all these people want is a roast beef sandwich. So Moshe turns to God and he says, did I give birth to these people? May I only basar? How am I going to get all this meat? And why are they asking for meat now? We're about to begin traveling into Israel.
The month's supposed to start.
And I'm sick and tired. They said we're sick and tired of the month. Yeah. This is what's on their mind.
It's true, yeah.
So Moshe knows very well, he tells HaKadosh Baruch Hu, if this is the mindset of the people, kill me right now. Hargeini na harog. That's what how Moshe ends his speech in verse 15. V'imkacha at oseli, hargeini na harog. I'm not interested in being the leader any longer. So God calms him down and he says, I'll get you some help, Mo. Esfali Shivamish. He assembles 70 elders. They're going to give you some help. You don't have to dead the birth. Moshe eventually says, okay, I'll give him one more chance. Which expires in the next parsha in Shlach with the Meraglim. And then Moshe knows he's had it already. He knew that it was not the Mei Meriva. Moshe blamed always Am Yisrael for the Meraglim for him not getting into Israel. It's black and white in Chumash Devar. Moshe blames Am Yisrael for his not getting in. So, and in fact, at the end of this chapter 11, there are two prophets who offer prophecy, Eldad and Medad. The Torah doesn't tell us what they said. But Rashi, in the name of the Midrash, fills in and says, they said, Moshe meit, v'Yehoshua machnis. Moshe's going to die. It's exactly what he requested. His request will be fulfilled. V'Yehoshua machnis. Says the Rav. These two psukim were supposed to be fulfilled right here and now. But based on the reaction of Bnei Yisrael looking for meat and watermelon, what happens? They were not fulfilled now. And how are they bracketed? With inverted nuns. Take off on Moshe's word in verse 29, Nosim anachnu el hamakom. Where are you going? Back into the desert. Invert the nuns. You're not going into Israel in 3 days. You're going to be wandering in the desert for 40 more years. No sim, just reverse it. Not El HaMakom HaShem HaShem Etenachem, but back into the desert. Who knows how long what happened. So what happened to these two psukim? What happened to them? They were supposed to be fulfilled, but they never weren't. They weren't. So why did God record them in the text here? If they were not actually fulfilled, they were scheduled to be fulfilled. But when God dictates the Torah to Moshe, he could have just omitted them because it never was realized. So what became of these two psukim? Suggested the Rav that these two psukim became the symbol of Am Yisrael's entry into Israel during the course of their history. And explains the Rambam's policy. The first pasuk says, Vayehi bin Soa Ha'aron Vayomer Moshe. That now refers to the conquest of Yehoshua. Now when Yehoshua went into Israel, what did he take with him every time he went into battle?
The Aron.
The Aron. So the Aron will be carried, transported by Yehoshua, and every time he comes to a place, he prays to God for success. And when they capture this territory, Ai, and then Beit El, with the Aron, what do? They sanctify that place with the Aron. But that Aron has a condition. When does this traveling Aron have the capacity to sanctify any place and come and touches? When it fulfills Kuma Hashem v'yafutzu oivecha. When the enemies are running away from us. If we're defeating the enemies, this Aron has the capacity to sanctify.
Isn't it the other way around?
No, it's not the other way around. But if the enemy is pursuing us, and we're on the run, this Aron has no capacity any longer to sanctify. And therefore, when the Babylonians kicked us out of Israel, the land forfeited its Kiddushah. Because its source of sanctity was the traveling Aron. Binisoa Aron, and that depended on the fulfillment of Kuma Hashem v'yafutzu oivecha. Now comes something, an event that takes place at the end of Bayit Rishon, which will impact the temple right away and the second entry into Israel. On the night of the opening of the Beit HaMikdash, the Midrash tells us that Shlomo HaMelech had a dream even before Martin Luther King. Had a dream. What dream did he have? HaKadosh Baruch Hu came to him and said, the Mikdash you just built is going to be destroyed. That was Shlomo's dream the first night that he, after he built the Beit HaMikdash. So he took the dream seriously. He knew it was a form of nevuah, of prophecy. And he built a tunnel on the Har HaBayit. And he told his son to tell his son to tell his son that if you see the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash as imminent, take the Aron, put it into the tunnel, lock it up, and throw the keys away. That's exactly what Tzidkiyahu did. He took the Aron, one of the last Jewish kings before the exile, and he put it on the Har HaBayit, in this tunnel, and he locked it up and he threw away the keys. In fact, this is one serious mistake that Spielberg made when he filmed Raiders of the Lost Ark. If he would have asked me, I would have showed him the Rambam, and I would have told him this. But he filmed it in Egypt. The Aron is not in Egypt. It's on the Har HaBayit. There is a Mishnah in Masechet Yuma that tells us that a cleaning man moved one of the tiles on the Temple Mount. He looked inside and he died. And the Kohanim knew that he had taken off the tile of that particular tunnel and he looked at the Aron. And the last pasuk of this week's Parsha. Look at the end of Parshat Bamidbar. The last pasuk of this week's rather lengthy Parsha. It's 159 pasukim, Parshat Bamidbar. It's a very long Parsha. Third longest. It's chapter 4, verse 20. Velo yavo'u lir'ot Kivala et hakodesh vametu. Kivala, says Sadia and others, means when the kodesh is covered. No one was allowed into the kodesh hakodashim, only the kohen gadol once a year. But if somebody would walk in, what does the Torah say? If I or you would go in and take a peek, what happens? You die. And the Kohanim, during the Second Temple, assumed that's what happened to that cleaning man. It's in the Mishnah. He saw the Aron.
But they carried the Aron all the time.
Ah, that's when it was. It says when it was supposed to be covered, when in the scar, not to be seen. So, according to the Mishnah, I have no idea why during the Second Temple they didn't take it out once they discovered it. We don't know why the Kohanim ignored it. But the Aron was there. There's no doubt about it. No doubt.
Is that the same?
Hold on one second. Hold on. Now comes the second pasuk. The second pasuk says, Uvenucho Yomar. When the Aron will be at rest. When will the Aron be at rest? At the end of the Second Temple. The Aron is at rest. So number one, we understand why the sanctity of the Mikdash never terminated. Why? Because the Aron was never taken from the Mikdash. Maybe the menorah was during the Roman period. Maybe it was. No, we're not sure. But certainly certain vessels were. But the Aron was never carried out. It's still there. Ad hayom hazeh. And when was it placed there? At the end of the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. Now it's Uvenucho Yomar. Now Ezra comes back 70 years later And what's the first thing he does? He builds the Beit HaMikdash. Because he knows what's going to sanctify Israel this time around. Not the Aron which is traveling, but the Aron in its resting place. Now what does the Pasuk say you need in order to sanctify the land the second time? Uvenucho yomar. Do you need Kuma Hashem v'yafutzo evecha? No. What do you need? Shuva Hashem rivavot alfei Yisrael. All you need is 20,000 people coming back. Rivavot is at least, rivavah is 10,000. Rivavot is minimum 20,000. 20,000 people come back, this Aron will sanctify the land. So the second Aron, the second sanctity of Eretz Yisrael came about through what? The Aron in its resting place. And that's why Rambam believes the sanctity of Israel the second time around is of a permanent nature, just like the first Beit HaMikdash is of a permanent nature, because they both share the common denominator. What do they have? The Aron b'menuchot. The Aron in its resting place. Yes? What? No, there was a rock, which we call the Even Shtiyah. If you'll come to Shul second day Sukkot and listen to the Hoshanas, the first word is Hoshana Even Shasiya Hoshan. That's why the Muslims call it the Dome of the Rock.
The Shtiyah is like foundation.
Yes, that's correct.
The infrastructure.
Correct. So that's why they call Dome of the Rock, because they built it on the place where there was a rock to highlight the place where initially the Aron was. And then during the entire second Beit HaMikdash, the Kohen Gadol did not sprinkle towards the Aron. There was no Aron there. He sprinkled towards the rock, which was right on top of that particular tunnel. Yes. What? I don't know. I can't answer that. Yes. According to many. Certainly the second Luchot, and according to many, the Shivrei Luchot were there as well. Others believe that the Shivrei Luchot had a separate Aron. And we're not sure what's buried, but certainly the second Luchot, and in all probability, a Sefer Torah as well. A complete copy of a Sefer Torah.
Is under that rock?
Yeah.
What do we anticipate, or do we anticipate, any what will be with the Aron in the next
Okay, we anticipate in the third Mikdash, it depends whose view you accept. If you accept Rashi's view, that it will be built not through human endeavor, but by God. That's Rashi's opinion. Third Beit HaMikdash will be built by God. We assume the Aron's coming back. If it's going to be, as Rambam believes, human endeavor has an obligation to build the Beit HaMikdash, we probably will either try to locate it, or build another Aron like you build everything else. No one has located it yet. No one has made an attempt, to my knowledge, to locate it.
If you go down the tunnels and they say that's where...
Yeah, if you go in the tunnels, they say that's... Yes, they say it's probably there.
So is there anything written in the Arabs, a liturgy, that says that they built it on the rock that was Jewish?
I'm not sure. I don't know if they acknowledge that. But there's no doubt that that's why they built it there. There's no doubt. Yes?
And then the Aron is useful. So if the third Beit HaMikdash, does we have to get the Luchot again? Should we have to do it?
No, the Luchot is still in there.
But you can't get them.
So then you don't need the Luchot in the Aron. You don't need it. What? I understand. So we'll put another Sefer Torah in there. That's all. That's all. Very simple.
That's the problem.
Yes?
I don't want to contradict you, but Spielberg made a very good point for the Jews and for the world, because he made a lot of historical movies which, even if they are incorrect, precise, still the world got to know.
I know. I'm not blashing. I think he's a great director.
I just wanted to give
he is a great director, but that's one mistake he made. That's all. That's all. He got the wrong information. So that's what's happening through these two psukim. They were scheduled to be fulfilled right there and then. They were not, because of the mood expressed by Bnei Yisrael. God brackets them with the inverted nuns as if to tell them they're going back into the desert. And what God leaves them here as the symbol as to what's going to happen sometime in the future. So much so are these bracketed that the Gemara in Masechet Bava Batra tells us that we are wrong for calling the Chumash Chumash. Correct. They are seven books of the Bible. Not five. Because Sefer Bamidbar is divided into three books, according to the Gemara. Up until from chapter 1 of Bamidbar until verse chapter 10, verse 35 is book number 4. These two psukim are book number 5. From chapter 11 until the end of the book is book number 6. And then Dvarim is book number 7. The Gemara says there are seven books of the Torah. Nobody can explain why we ignore this Gemara and we call it the Chamisha Chumshei Torah. Because this, according to the Gemara, is not just, it's called a Sefer Bifnei Atzmo. These two psukim became their own book. What do I mean, own book? It eventually encapsulates everything that will happen in history for the next 1,000 years or so. Next 1,000 years. And that's why it's their own book. It's just the headlines of what's going to happen. But based on the Rav's analysis, why it belongs here, why it was never fulfilled, and what happened to them, we understand Rambam's viewpoint in two areas. Number one, we understand why the sanctity of the Mikdash was never terminated. And number two, we understand why the second coming of Ezra still operates Bizman Hazeh. And that all of Eretz Yisrael retains its Kiddushah, its sanctity today because of Ezra's return, despite the fact that we were banished by the Romans. Because the Mikkadesh was the Aron Biminuchot, in its resting place. And that's what we celebrate today, having that opportunity once again to be reunited with Yerushalayim, Ir HaKodesh. Yes, we don't have a Beit HaMikdash, so the Simcha is not complete, but nonetheless, we have a unified Yerushalayim and fully endowed with Kiddushah according to the Rambam. And we are careful, and there are halachot, which the Rambam mandates of us. I'll give you but one or two. Because the Rambam believes that all of Yerushalayim is connected to the Mikdash. I'll give you an example. According to Torah law, how many days of Sukkot are you obligated to take Arba Minim? Only the first day. Ulekachtem lachem bayom harishon priyetz hadar. That's what the Torah says in Vayikra chapter 23, verse 41. Bayom harishon. That's it. The last phrase of that pasuk reads, Usmachtem lifnei Hashem elokeichem shivat yamim. Translated, you are to rejoice in the presence of the Lord 7 days. Okay, there's a mitzvah of simcha and sukkahs. Says the Yerushalmi, how do you demonstrate simcha during the 7 days? Yerushalmi, simchat halulav, hakatuv medaber. In the Beit HaMikdash, you take the lulav for 7 days. After the destruction of the Second Temple, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai told us to take lulav for 7 days to commemorate the practice that existed in the temple days where they took the lulav only in the temple. Rambam says they did not only take it in the temple all 7 days, but all of Yerushalayim. And that's why there are people who live in West Jerusalem, but on Yom Tov and Chol HaMoed, every single day, they will go into the old city just to fulfill the mitzvah of Arba Minim on a biblical level. If you're outside the old city, it's only Midirabbanan, like Teaneck. It's only commemorating what happened in the Mikdash. But in Yerushalayim itself, in the old city, because the city is defined by the walls, the Chomot of Yerushalayim, it's Midoraita according to the Rambam. So there are people today who either make a point of davening in the old city every day or Chol HaMoed, or if they daven in then, they drive into the old city, or right out, walk in, take our baminim, and then go home. Instead of taking fulfilling a mitzvah, which is only a zecher lemikdash, you fulfill the mitzvah on a d'oraita level, according to Rambam. Many don't agree with the Rambam, but the Rambam says this in many locations. A second time, where Rambam parts company with everybody else and believes that Yerushalayim is treated like the mikdash. When Rosh Hashanah comes out on Shabbat, do we ever blow shofar?
No.
No. Why don't we blow shofar when Rosh Hashanah comes out on Shabbat? Because we're afraid, the rabbi said, we're afraid that somebody in their haste to fulfill the mitzvah, he gets so excited that it's Rosh Hashanah, that he'll carry his shofar in a public domain and violate Chilul Shabbat in great anticipation of the mitzvah of shofar. That's why they suspended the mitzvah of lulav. That's why they suspend the mitzvah of Megillah, like in Yerushalayim. Shushan Purim can come out on Shabbos. When Purim here comes out on Friday, they observe, but they don't read the Megillah. They read it on Friday, like we do, because the Rabbanan said, no Megillah. Fine. The Mishnah tells us, however, in the Beit HaMikdash, you blow the shofar on Shabbos. Why do you blow the Beit HaMikdash in the... Because in the Beit HaMikdash, the Kohanim are careful not to carry a shofar in a public domain. They know that. All rabbinic gzeirot don't apply to the Mikdash. There's no such thing as muktzah in the Beit HaMikdash. Muktzah doesn't exist in the Beit HaMikdash. All rabbinic transgressions, which are designed to protect you from violating a biblical law, none of them have application in the Mikdash. Says the Rambam, not only did they blow in the Mikdash, they blew in all of Yerushalayim. Throughout the temple days, any shul in Yerushalayim, in the old city. So in the Churba synagogue, they would blow shofar. They would blow shofar. That was Rambam Shita. And because he extends Kiddushat Mikdash to Kiddushat all of Yerushalayim. And that is why, during the time of the temple, if somebody became a leper, a mitzora, you had to leave, the Torah tells us, has to leave all three camps, shalosh machanot. When you traveled in the midbar, there were three camps. There was Machne Yisrael, that's where all the Jews live. Then there was Machane Leviya, the Levites who lived around the Mikdash. And then there was Machne Shechina. Machne Shechina was where HaKadosh Baruch Hu rested, in the Azara of the Mikshkan. Those three Machanot have their corollary when you get into Eretz Yisrael in Yerushalayim. The Azara, where the Mikdash was, is Machne Shechina, where the Aron was. The Harabayit is Machne Leviya. And the rest of Yerushalayim is Machne Yisrael. And a leper, if he was a leper in Yerushalayim, he had to leave the city completely. Because he's not allowed to be in Machne Shechina, not allowed to be on the Har HaBayit, and he can't even be in Yerushalayim. Because Yerushalayim's Kiddusha extends on, the Mikdash's Kiddusha extends until the walls of the Choma. And that's Rambam Shita. Again, many, many such halachot. And that's why we treat Yerushalayim with a greater degree of elevated Kiddusha b'zman hazeh than the rest of Eretz Yisrael in regarding a certain halachot. Again, according to Rambam, it's a d'oraita, a biblical law. And this pasuk, the Aron Bimnuchot, explains it. Yes? Only the walls, yes. He defines it, but now, There are ways, according to the Mishnah, to expand the sanctity of Yerushalayim beyond the walls. There are ways. You need a member of the Sanhedrin, you bring a korban, you eat it there. There are ways. It will be done. Trust me. Not only legally incorporated, like Ramot and other places that are part of, out that all of West Yerushalayim is part of Yerushalayim, but halachically it will. As soon as this is Sanhedrin, they will take care of that. One of their first orders of business. What? That's a good question. All right, we'll stop here.